From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News. Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week via Skype, Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal, Richard Lautendresse, correspondent for TVA Nouvelle Canada, and our moderator is Dan Revive, columnist for Newsday.
Welcome, everyone. Here are the issues. A new leader here in America, Joseph R. Biden Jr., is now the president of the United States. Donald J. Trump has returned to being a private citizen at his resort and private club in Palm Beach, Florida. Also, Mr. Biden's Democratic Party has captured just barely majority control in the U.S. Senate, and the Democrats already had the majority in the House of Representatives. What do these big changes mean for the months and years ahead? First, let's go back to this past Wednesday. Every 4 years, on January 20th, a president of the United States is sworn in. Joe Biden took the oath of office, pledging to work hard to unite Americans in a country that is politically deeply divided. But some of Mr. Biden's first policy moves are already being condemned by leading Republicans. Mr. Biden, they say, is simply being a liberal or progressive, bringing back Barack Obama's policies, as well as many Obama staffers returning to the U.S. government. Tom DeFrank, first, please speak about Inauguration Day with the tightest security we'd ever seen here in Washington, D.C. 25,000 National Guard soldiers plus thousands of police were on duty. Tom, how did things go?
Well, they went surprisingly well. There was no massive influx of insurrectionists, as some have called them, as peaceful protesters, as they like to call themselves. It reminds me of the Green Zone in Baghdad. At one point, a huge swath of downtown was shut down. 18 subway system stations were closed. The bridges were closed coming into Washington. It would have been very difficult for anybody to make mischief. And thankfully, there was none. I mean, now somebody will surely say maybe it was overkill. But after the events of January 6th, where thousands of people got into the Capitol, the temple of American democracy, and trashed a good part of it, the government wasn't going to take any chances. So far, so good. The inauguration went off without a hitch, Dan.
Tom, it was a relief that there wasn't any violence here in Washington on Inauguration Day itself. And at the ceremony, the former president, the outgoing president, Donald Trump, he wasn't there. A big break in tradition. That hadn't happened for more than 150 years that an outgoing president refused to come to the ceremony that was swearing in his successor. But there were three former presidents there, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and a Republican, George W. Bush. So there was that symbol of unity. Richard Lautendresse, as a foreign correspondent here, a Canadian who knows the United States very well, when you put all of that together, no violence, yes, Republicans were there, but not Donald Trump. What did you think about Inauguration Day on the 20th?
Well, it looked and it felt as normal as can be. Tom was underlining the fact that the city was under siege, was the National Guards, thousands of them around, policemen, women. But there's also the reality of the pandemic. We could not bring people in the city. The new administration didn't want people to agglomerate on the mall and be side by side. So it was creating a new reality, a very different reality compared to what we saw during the previous inauguration days when, you know, there was fervor and there was enthusiasm. And I remember well Barack Obama's swearing-in ceremonies. There were people, even people who did not support the new president, who were in town willing to indulge in this new spirit coming with this new administration. This time it was impossible to build this. And still, I had the impression that walking around, the way Joe Biden went, for instance, to mass early in the morning with congressional leaders, he was sworn in normally as 45 presidents before him. The visit to Arlington Cemetery was solemn but normal. You know, there's a platform that was built just on the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue and Lafayette Square in front of the White House. I have seen Donald Trump and Barack Obama walk in front of us. But in the end, you know, there were military bands and police corps and the band from the University of Delaware and the President Biden walked in front of us without a crowd, but as normal as can be. So all this to say, to me, they succeeded to organize something with the threat that was in the city after what happened 2 weeks ago and the reality of the pandemic. And it worked out pretty well. That's the impression it left me.
A lot of relief here in Washington that January 20th has come and gone without major upheaval or violence. And yet, you're right, you had the sense that because of COVID-19, that there were never going to be many members of the public involved, but especially after January 6th. As Tom has reminded us, pro-Trump protesters invaded the Capitol building. They tried to stop Congress from confirming the election results. At least 5 deaths were caused by that. And 2 weeks later, in exactly the same location, just outside the Capitol building and inside the building as well, everything was normal and calm. So that was a major relief. But Tom, the anger that we saw on January 6th, it seems to me that a lot of the rumors and misinformation and mistrust still exists in America. Opinion polls indicate that tens of millions of Americans don't think that the election was fair and legitimate. That's not gone, is it, Tom?
No, it's not gone at all, Dan. About a third of the country has questions about the election's legitimacy, but more to the point, more than two-thirds of voters who supported Mr. Trump think the election was rigged and agree with him that it was stolen. That is a breathtaking number. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. But when you have that many Americans believing it, that tells you we have a long way to go here in terms of calming the tones of bringing the country together. Now, President Biden said in his inaugural speech, democracy has prevailed. And I think he was right about that. But bipartisanship is a long way from being a reality. With that many millions of people believing the former president's spurious allegations, there's a lot of polarization and a lot of anger out there. And as long as Republicans don't step up to the plate and say, we have to say this, these claims of a rigged election are bogus. Until Republicans start doing that, I don't think there's any chance to fix the polarization, the extreme polarization in the country.
Richard, as you were covering the start of the new Biden administration on January 20th, what stood out to you? Because I know a lot of correspondents were underlining the vice president, right? The new vice president, Kamala Harris, until recently a senator from the state of California. She's the first female vice president. She's the first person of color, as some people put it, of both African-American heritage and South Asian heritage. There were celebrations in her mother's ancestral town in India. And so Kamala Harris represents a lot, but I think she wanted to show that her focus is getting to work.
Yes, the focus of the vice president is to show that the country can fall on its feet and start running early in a new direction. And you were asking me how it was perceived, for instance, in Canada. We underlined the president's speech, this way of introducing and insisting on the fact that the Americans have for the first time a female, a woman as vice president of the United States. And he added, don't tell me this country cannot change. Things cannot change. And the perception in Canada, but I think in several other countries, was that during and after the 4 years of the Trump presidency, there was this impression that, okay, we know how this president is dealing, is managing his thing, a lot of improvisation. It's very hard to figure out how he will manage this issue one day and the day after. Now, things can change in a way that we understand and we can forecast. And I believe this is the way Kamala Harris was seen, but also, by extension, the new orders that are coming, the executive orders signed by President Biden, give us a clearer sense that, okay, what we lived, what we went through during the last 4 years, it's a totally different dynamic, which bring us somewhere else. In Canada, Dan, we, for instance, talking about those executive orders, there was disappointment when we heard that the Keystone Project was abandoned. The Keystone XL Project was which was supposed to bring oil from the tar sands fields in central Canada to the Gulf of Mexico. This said, as much as Prime Minister Justin Trudeau underlined this, he was enthusiastic with this idea of, for instance, rejoining the Climate Paris Accord, rejoining the World Health Organization, the moratorium on oil and natural gas in the Arctic, you know, there are several issues there which, in the spirit of seeing Kamala Harris arriving at the vice presidency, shows that there's something new coming to the United States and to the world with this administration.
Something new and something old all along, that is a return to conventional pre-Trump policies in many ways. We'll be talking more about global reaction a little later, but let's just consider COVID-19 and how the crisis, in fact, is worse than it was in the spring of last year, including here in the U.S. Instead of last year's average of fewer than 2,000 deaths from COVID every day, it's now more than 4,000 people dying of coronavirus each day in this country. And the problems with delivering vaccines are embarrassing. Tom DeFrank, what do you see?
Well, I couldn't agree more, Dan. And there are now stories, and quoting Biden officials, as saying, we have discovered there is no real distribution plan for the vaccine, and there's not enough of it out there. So one of the first executive orders Biden has signed is to enable, under the Defense Production Act, increase and expand production of the vaccine and distribution and delivery of the vaccine. The Trump regime basically said, all right, we have created a vaccine in record time, and distributing it is your problem, not our problem. Well, the Biden people have said, no, it's everybody's problem, and we have to have a more centralized, coordinated plan. So Biden is still hoping that he can get 100 million people vaccinated in the first 100 days of his presidency, which would be roughly the 1st of May. We'll see whether he can do that. But the Biden people are saying the Trump administration talked a lot but didn't do enough. And of course, Biden has ordered the mandatory wearing of masks on all federal property. It can't be mandatory other places. The one of the dirty little not so secret secrets is that millions of Americans are spurning masks, and it's become a political issue. Basically, if you're for Trump, you think masks are a plot or a hoax or something. We have now passed the 400,000 deaths milestone, a dubious milestone indeed. And there are now computer models that say we may lose another 100,000 Americans in the next couple of months unless we do something about masks. So it's really getting worse, not getting better. And it's one of many problems that Biden has to address right away.
More on the coronavirus crisis and worldwide reaction to the change in leadership here in the United States when we continue after this brief break.
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype. Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal. Richard Lautendress, correspondent for TVA Nouvelle Canada. And our moderator, Dan Rabib, columnist for Newsday.
Richard, we were just talking about the way the United States is handling the COVID-19 crisis, where things are getting worse. And we hear even from big cities, and maybe especially big cities like New York and Los Angeles, that they are running out of vaccine. There are days in which citizens have an appointment to get their vaccine shot, and then they show up and, I'm sorry, we've run out of vaccine. What are the facts? I mean, how can it be that the manufacturers are not keeping up with demand?
Well, obviously, there's a part of the entire process of distributing this vaccine that's not clear. There were agreements that were signed, and we had the impression from long ago, several months ago, that it was clear as soon as the vaccines were going to be approved, that they were going to be easily accessible, easily or quite easily distributed, and it's not that clear. But it brings, unfortunately, Dan, it brings me back to the before the Biden administration, in the way the whole thing was managed, the will of going fundamentally through states to manage this distribution of vaccine makes it very hard to figure out Where do they come from? Where do they go? Who's going to have them first? And this is why I see, even without criticizing the Trump administration again, the simple fact that this new administration, it really makes a priority of fighting the coronavirus. When I was listening to the very first briefing of the new press secretary, Jen Psaki, when she said that Wednesday evening, the day of the inauguration, that the president wants us to lead by example, us being the members of the new White House, this idea that if the Trump administration had shown the same will to lead by example, to show the world that wearing a mask, being organized, is going to get us to results, that would help. So what I mean by this is that there's a signal sent by this new administration that we are going to make sure that every step is going to be built and followed closely. So first, wear masks, keep distance. Okay, now the vaccine. Where are the vaccine? How many do we have? Who gets them? And how is it distributed? There's a will to boost the supply chains, to increase the testing capacities. There's this 100 days masking challenge. So clear moment, clear repère, as we say in French, criteria that have to be respected. And I have the impression that to answer your question after this long introduction, we start from not enough information to clear benchmarks that will have to be respected, and then we will have to figure out, okay, why didn't it happen this time?
Tom, you're an expert, of course, on American government, and I think we have to point out that during a time of transition, the Biden administration doesn't begin with its Secretary of Health and Human Services. There is no clear permanent leadership in many agencies of the U.S. government, and this could hamper a national response to COVID-19 and getting enough vaccines out there.
At the moment, the only cabinet officer confirmed by the U.S. Senate is the Director of National Intelligence. Every other cabinet level agency is being administered by an acting secretary or an acting administrator. And I think this is because the Republicans have not scheduled appointments for them. Now, I suspect within a week that will change, but at the moment, the orderly transition of power to the agencies has gone slowly. And you're correct, that will slow down the new Biden policies on vaccine dissemination and distribution.
You know, at least when it comes to newspaper editorials around the world, you know, I got the sense, especially I would say in Western Europe, also political leaders and what they had to say, well, they seem relieved that the 4 years of Donald Trump as president are over, as though having President Joe Biden, a former vice president who was a U.S. senator for more than 30 years, will signal a return to conventional American policies. Some are saying a return to normal. Certainly, the Donald Trump policy of America first is not the Biden policy. Richard, what have you noticed about global reaction?
Global reaction, I've noticed, is one of now we can predict what is coming. We can predict because President Biden has been vice president. When he was a senator, he was chairing the Senate Committee on Foreign Affairs. They've seen him. They know the way he sees the world. He knows the world. It was interesting to read the very last interview of former State Secretary Rex Tillerson about foreign policy, about Donald Trump, underlining the fact that he didn't know the world. He didn't understand the world. Well, Joe Biden knows the world. He knows several of the leaders who are in place at the moment. Then there's Antony Blinken, is nominee for state secretary. He's been close to the president for a long time when he was senator, but he knows the State Department. He knows the world. So the reaction outside of the United States is finally a predictable team. We don't think in Canada that the concept of America first is totally going to disappear, because we know that Joe Biden insists on the buying American, and he repeated it himself, saying, you know, built in America, sold in America, and everything you want to put perspective on the fact that it's going to be an American-centered policy, but with an openness to the world that was not perceived positively in the previous administration, and this simple impression of predictability and of willingness to work on the world stage with the United Nations, with the international organizations, is perceived very positive.
Right from the start, both Wednesday and Thursday, the Biden White House said that the United States will re-enter the Paris Climate Change Accord and will cancel the Trump plan to leave the World Health Organization. The Biden administration will work with the WHO on vaccines all around the world and on trying to fight coronavirus and other diseases. So there may be a measure of relief around the world, but Saudi Arabia may stand out as an exception. The Saudis enjoyed their relations with President Trump. He would emphasize all the American weapons and military aircraft that the U.S. was selling to Saudi Arabia and other Gulf Arab countries. Those countries are waging a war against the Houthi rebels in Yemen. Saudi Arabia claims that the Houthis are basically proxies for Iran, and Donald Trump agreed with that. The Biden administration may have doubts. And on China, well, Donald Trump had turned against China this past year, saying that coronavirus is the China virus. And so he was tough on China when it comes to trade. And also in recent weeks, the Trump administration was condemning human rights abuses in China, something that it had not done. Tom DeFrank, do you have any sense that the Biden administration will be tough on Saudi Arabia and China when it comes to human rights? And that may affect America's place in the world.
Yes, I think that's going to exactly be the case. The Biden administration will be tougher on Saudi Arabia and China on human rights and civil rights. And I think the Chinese will howl about it, and the Saudis will be unhappy about it, but they're going to have to get used to that. That will happen. I wanted to add very quickly to something we've not talked about, Dan, about the changes in Washington. The biggest change, I think, is the tone. The tone of governance. Yes, we are a polarized, divided country, but we don't have Donald Trump on Twitter referring to his enemies as losers or jerks or dopes or low IQ. The pejorative nature of the Trump White House and the Trump government has gone away. That doesn't mean it's all smooth sailing. It doesn't mean the Democrats and the Republicans are going to agree on policies going forward, but in terms of just tonalities, there's a better, and I would argue more productive and constructive tone of discourse and dialogue all of a sudden, and we haven't had that in 4 years.
And just to button up our broadcast, Richard, what's your sense of that? Because the Biden administration says it wants the United States to be more united. Unity was one of the very big words for Joe Biden on the day he was inaugurated. What do you think is the outlook? A lot of doubts about uniting this country?
Doubts for sure. There's no magic wand that would improve quickly the state of affairs between Americans. But I believe then that Biden's success in controlling the pandemic, of breaking this virus and the spread of the virus and the impression that we're still living away from each other without being able to have a normal life. The success of the new administration on this very point, and add to this, success of restarting the economy, helping businesses, smaller businesses in particular, to go back to something that looks like normal, welcoming customers. Again, the two go side by side. The idea of controlling the virus and improving slowly the economy and the economic activities, this success will bring more unity, more willingness from the opponent to the arrival of Joe Biden going forward and saying, okay, we see the outcome, we see the result, we see that it works out. Why not give this president a chance? Which was what Joe Biden insisted, and I think this is a major thing. Give me a chance, listen to me, let's see how we can do it together. And I believe with some results on these at this level, it will help this unity expectation.
Literally in his first speech as president, Joe Biden did ask Americans to give him a chance. That's all the time we have for this broadcast. Thanks to our panelists, Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to the National Journal, and Richard Latendresse, correspondent for TVA or TVA Nouvelle in Canada. This program is produced by The Voice of America. I'm Dan Ravitch.